A very good morning to everyone. The first case on our oral argument calendar this morning is number 03-1875. Please, counsel, as soon as I find my cards up here, I'll... Please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Colette Dorn on behalf of the plaintiff. Your Honor, this comes before you on a matter that was decided in the district court against Mr. Simbos in regard to a count of the complaint that dealt with the Age Discrimination and Employment Act and the counts that were preempted, according to the district court, I believe erroneously, for a state law claim of breach of contract and promissory estoppel. With regard to the count of the complaint that dealt with the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, Your Honor, I believe that error was committed in that regard, since not all of the evidence was considered by the court. In particular, the court did not find that there was a prima facie case that was presented with regard to Mr. Simbos staying on with Phillips, what I would regard as a transfer or continuation position.
Well, could we just be clear, because you've argued that there were two different agreements, and then you focus on the February time period when he's decided he doesn't want to go with the BCC job, and they say you can stay here, but they don't say how long. I mean, are we supposed to construe that as meaning until he dies, or for 5 years, or for 10 minutes, or how long does that promise last?
Your Honor, in terms of that particularly, I think the testimony was pretty clear by Mr. Simbos. There was no end point put on that particular promise.
Right. So why is it 6 months entirely consistent with it?
It is not based upon the representations that were made to him.
But what reason did he have to think it would be longer than 6 months?
The reason that he had to, I believe, think that it would be longer was because the whole conversations were revolving around allowing him to continue in his employment at Phillips. And I think it was really based upon his longevity with the company and really what he felt to be a situation in which he existed at that company for over 21 years.
But and also, what reason is there in this record to think that Phillips Components decided it would be 6 months rather than some indefinitely longer period of time because of something about Mr. Simbos' age? I mean, even if they were being arbitrary or they just changed their mind or in any other things, you need to link it somehow to his age. And I see nothing about his age in this sequence of events.
Your Honor, I'm glad to ask that, and if I may try to address that point. With regard to the issue with respect to his age, during that six-month period, Mr. Simbos was promised that they would actively look for a position for him, and I think that's clear from certainly what the February 1st, 1999 agreement provided.
But that's a different thing. First of all, you're talking about duration of employment. Secondly, you're talking about how aggressively do they help him find another job. And here, too, unless they only help young people to get alternative employment and not older people, you don't have an age case.
Well, I believe in regard to at least the prima facie analysis that the court found with respect to at least a transfer position and application for those positions, I think that the district court was correct with regard to the analysis of what constitutes application in this case.
I know, but you're not answering my question. What about age? Where do you have something that says they helped young people, they didn't help old people, or that they were sitting on their hands with respect to him because he was old?
Well, I think prima facie-wise, the fact that they put younger people in those positions for which he would have been qualified.
And your evidence of that, since they say they didn't even fill 6 of the positions, and he wasn't qualified for the other 2 of the 8, and the evidence on these others is is awfully vague.
The other positions.
The others that you're alleging,
that
the other
correct
positions, I mean, I just don't see where he has evidence that he was qualified for them.
Well, you're
certainly not age discrimination if you're not qualified, right?
And in terms of that qualification, unfortunately, what happened with respect to those other positions is that he believes he was qualified. After the fact, of course, he took a look at what those job requirements were. And based upon his extensive experience with the company, he says, yeah, I think I was qualified for those, certainly. And
but did you take depositions of hiring managers or talk to the people who were in those jobs? I realize your complaint about the actual job description is what it is, but there are many ways of seeing what a job entails.
Your Honor, I believe that in terms of that, what the evidence discovered is that there were no resumes. There was nothing kept in regard to those requisition files.
But there are people. There are people who hired. There are people who fill the job. There are ways of finding this out.
There are people that hired, and I imagine the scenario in terms of how that would work. I would question those people, and there would be absolutely no record in terms of from which they are to testify on regarding what those applications were, regarding what the file was. So to completely rely on some individual after the fact, after making the employment decision, and have never considered Mr. Symbos from the get-go.
But you couldn't ask them, you know, does this present job entail computer skills? Does this job entail marketing out in the field? Does this job entail, you know, the things that you might think about to describe a job?
Well, I think that the job description was specific enough that we knew what the job was. Mr. Symbos knew. That's why he felt he could make the statement that he was qualified for the position, because at least that detail was there. But beyond that detail, whoever they made, number one, they were not making any evaluation of Mr. Symbos for that job simply because they never informed him of the position.
Well, he didn't apply either, right?
Well, I would argue that he certainly did apply under the standard that the district court put forth in this case, which is this, that he gives his resume to human resources. The individual, Phyllis Christman, that is particularly charged with the duty, specifically according to the agreement, to actively find a job for him. Lo and behold, what happens? He's not even informed that these positions exist, particularly what I described as the third class of jobs, that is the 89 positions that were filled within Phillips Components during the year 1999, when Mr. Symbos was, according to them as well, actively looking, when, according to the company, that all he has to do is submit his resume to be considered for a particular position.
What evidence in the record is there about the nature of those 89 positions? Are we talking about everything from file clerk to secretary to information technology systems to president to whatever?
We're talking about a lot of different job categories, Your Honor. That's not disputed. What Mr. Symbos did after this evidence was discovered was he went through the 89 jobs, and what he did was took a look at those positions, and he said, these were the ones, certainly, that I would have been interested in, according to my own qualifications, had I had the opportunity to have been aware of these jobs. And so then once that was determined, then it was much more narrowed down. That's certainly why in this case we're not claiming that he should have been, or that he was qualified for 89 positions. Certainly that's not what's being argued here. The
did point you zero in on which ones he should have
yes,
been considered
Judge,
for?
I certainly did. And those jobs were both detailed in regard to discovery, and they're in my brief as well as the statement of facts that was submitted by the plaintiff. And they all revolve around the very core of what his position was, which was sales and marketing. And those were the positions, narrowly. There's about 10 of them to which he thought that he would be qualified for. Had he been informed, as he should have been, by the company to have allowed him to pursue those positions. And once again, I think, you know, to some point in this case, obviously, these arguments with regard to both the breach of contract and the age case dovetail to a certain degree because of this affirmative duty by human resources Phillips to find a job for him, and not only within Phillips components, but through the company in general.
But how would they have authority to hire for some corporate component different from Phillips components?
According to the testimony of Karen Adamski, who was the first human resources individual that was involved with the situation, what she said is oftentimes between the divisions of all the different Phillips organizations, what they do is they communicate with each other, with the HR representatives. And so I think that's how they have the ability, at least, to communicate and try to place the individual into a position.
Phillips components independently incorporated?
Phillips components, from everything I've seen here, Doug, is actually a division of Phillips Electronics North America.
So it's listed here as a party defendant in its own right. Can it be a party defendant as a division of the corporation?
Yes, I believe so. That's who they've indicated the employer to be.
Is this initiative that he was expecting the company to take the reason he didn't do anything for 4 months?
No, not at all. Not at all, Your Honor. Actually, as of January of 1999, when he first actually learned that the pension benefits were not going to go into the BCC Corporation, and he decided to stay there. That is the point where he provided his resume to, again, Karen Adamski of Phillips Components with respect to what his qualifications were. So he knew it was going to be an interactive process.
Well, was that as interactive as it was? He gave him the resume and then was just waiting to hear from him?
No, I don't believe it was as interactive as it was. Once he gave the resume, there was a period of time, I believe, when I think he was honestly expecting through the agreement that there was going to be certainly a lot more done actively for him than was. And once it became apparent, I think, that there was not much activity that was being happening, that's when he became very, very involved. And I don't think there's any dispute either with respect to what Phillips thinks about what his activities were. According to Phillips Christman, the subsequent HR representative, he was very actively involved. And he did actually do extensive actions in order to find a position, like go on the internet, submit his resume to many, many different hiring managers, copying Phillips Christman on them, being actively involved with their the one individual that they did appoint to a system, which was Bob Akers, and I'll use that very remotely because he was really dissuaded in his efforts with Mr. Akers. So I think yes, he did not expect that he would do nothing in this process, and he absolutely did a lot in regard to helping find himself a position, but at the same time, there should have been more certainly done by Phillips. And according to the testimony of Ms. Christman, really nothing was done. So then and there, you know, there is a breach of that situation with respect to actively finding employment for him. I see that my time is...
You're in your rebuttal time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Doran. We'll hear now from Mr. Spitz.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. There are a few points that I'd like to highlight that support the district court's ruling in favor of Phillips Components on all of the plaintiff's claims in this case. With regard
to Mr. Spitz, following up on what Judge Ripple was commenting on, you must be representing Phillips Electronics North America Corporation. We don't have divisions litigating in this court.
That's correct.
It's persons who litigate, and divisions aren't separate persons.
That's correct, Your Honor. The only named defendant is Phillips Components, but we are representing Phillips
Electronics. But that's not correct, in other words.
That's correct. That is not correct. Phillips Components is the only named defendant in the case.
What I mean is somebody named a division, but the real defendant is the corporation of which that is a division.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Even if a prima facie case would be established here, there is no pretext, and I'll talk about that in just a second. With regard to the plaintiff's failure to establish a prima facie case, the plaintiff failed to establish that he applied for any open positions for which he was qualified. You talked earlier, Your Honor, about the eight positions. With regard to five of them, they were never filled.
But what Mr. Rand was emphasizing was that he did apply for positions that he knew about, but there was this further agreement that he would receive positive assistance from the human resources people in his division at Phillips Components, and that they really dropped the ball on that altogether and didn't provide him with that assistance. Isn't that somewhat different? It's hard to blame him for not finding information that people promised they were going to give him and they didn't.
Well, I believe that the evidence shows that they did actively look for a job for him and assist him in that process, but that's separate and apart from the age discrimination case. That goes to the promissory estoppel breach of contract action, which we argued is preempted, and I believe it would be preempted by ERISA in this particular case.
So you understand that he's not charging age discrimination in their failure to actively assist him?
Well, I believe they may be charging that, but specifically they haven't shown a prima facie case with regard to that because they haven't shown that there is any evidence in the record of a younger employee who was hired into the 10 positions that they mentioned, the 8 positions that they mentioned, other than the 2 which were filled because he wasn't qualified, nor have they shown that he was qualified for any of the positions. And there's no evidence in the record specifically. Mr. Sembos testified in his deposition that he had absolutely no idea who filled the positions, what their qualifications were, and he doesn't know if he was even qualified for it. The only thing he said is that he believes that maybe they were filled by substantially younger individuals, but he has no evidence to show that, and there is absolutely no evidence in the record to prove that. And in Rabinovitz versus Pena, this court indicated that his own self-serving assessments of his qualifications should not carry the weight.
You're talking right now about what Mr. Sembos calls the Class 1 group of opportunities. How about the Class 2 group of opportunities? He claims that he applied for jobs at other divisions and in effect was given the runaround. This comes back to just what the relationship is between divisions in this company, I guess. Isn't there a genuine issue, triable fact, as to whether or not he was really given an opportunity to apply for those positions, or whether he received very conflicting information about how to go about it?
I don't believe that's true, Your Honor, because with regard to the prima facie case, you have to show that the decision makers, the people who actually made the decision to hire and fill those positions, had knowledge of Mr. Sembos, and in fact hired somebody who was younger, who was equally or less qualified. There is no evidence in this record of that. Absolutely no evidence. Again, Mr. Sembos indicated that he doesn't know who filled the positions.
So even if he got the runaround, it doesn't count.
Even if he got the runaround, that wouldn't count with regard to the age discrimination case, Your Honor. And I don't believe that there is an issue with regard to that because there is no evidence as to who filled the positions and whether he was qualified for those particular positions. In addition to that, there's a question as to
at the bottom of page 7, top of page 8 of your opponent's brief. That's where she's talking about this. It's not terribly detailed, but it's the reference to the 89 positions. And she mentions those positions include business development management, program manager, and so on. There's just a list of them. I assume that there is some job description. You can just look at the job description. That's some evidence. And you can look at his resume. That's also some evidence and see how well they match. Why isn't that some evidence that he indeed might have been qualified for them?
Well, I don't believe that that would be some evidence when he himself testified that he doesn't know whether he had the qualifications for those particular
So you don't think we can look at the job description?
Well, I think you can look at the job description, Your Honor, but there's no evidence as to any deposition testimony or any evidence in the record of the hiring managers and what they indicated as far as what they considered to be the qualifications. In addition to that, there is no evidence that younger employees were hired into the position. There is no evidence in the record, and it's their burden to come forth with some evidence to show that. In addition to that, there was an intranet and an extranet, as we mentioned in our brief, that Mr. Sembos was aware of, and neither Phyllis Chrisman nor PC nor anyone else from PC had any involvement or authority in the hiring decision. So I don't know how you can say that there can be any type of age discrimination when the people who actually made the decisions either didn't know about Mr. Sembos or they didn't know that he was applying for a position and he didn't actually follow through on the internet or extranet to submit either a resume or to submit an application, which Phil Christman indicated specifically was a requirement in order to apply for a particular position.
Isn't there some dispute, though, about how much of this was Mr. Sembos' burden to do and how much he was entitled to trust their assurances that they would help him find a position? I mean, that's one question I have. Another question is maybe you could clarify exactly what Mr. Akers was doing. He was an independent contractor, or what was he?
He was an independent contractor acting as a recruiter on behalf of PC.
Okay.
And with regard to the issue that you raised, Your Honor, involving the fact that there was an issue as to whether they actively looked for a position, this court has indicated specifically that if there is a breach of contract or promissory estoppel claim, whether that claim survives or not, that's separate and apart from age discrimination, and that age discrimination should still, if you can't prove prima facie case or you can't prove pretext in this case, that should still carry the day. And so with regard to whether they actively look for a job, I think that goes more to the issue of breach of contract or promissory estoppel. With regard to pretext, even if the plaintiff could prove a prima facie case, there's no evidence that Phillips Components' reasons for not hiring him, the failure to apply and lack of qualifications, were pretext for age discrimination. To show pretext, the plaintiff must show that Phillips Components' reasons for not hiring him to fill a position are either factually baseless, not the actual motivation, or insufficient to motivate the discharge. In this case, plaintiff would have to show that the reasons given by PC, that plaintiff's skills were not a proper fit, were unworthy of credence. That's from the Ward case in the Seventh Circuit in 2001. He's presented no such evidence of that. It's interesting also to note that the two people who made the decisions with regard to Mr. Sembos were Ms. Christman and also Mr. Akers, who are both much older than Mr. Sembos. In fact, Mr. Akers was substantially older at the time that Mr. Sembos was seeking a position. In addition,
how could Mr. Akers have been a decision maker if he's just some independent contractor that they hired to help with this transition?
And I think, Your Honor, that whether there are agency issues or not, I think certainly whether he was a decision maker or if he wasn't a decision maker, I think it doesn't really play a role in this. I mean, the truth of the matter is that he, even if you could argue, and we would argue that he wouldn't be a decision maker, but even if he were, I think the evidence shows that he did not make any decision with regard to age. Certainly someone who is substantially older than the plaintiff in this particular case. There is one item that the plaintiff mentions in their brief about a stray remark where they claim that Mr. Akers specifically indicated to the plaintiff that he should take education off of his resume. And this court has indicated that would be a stray in the case of Rand versus CF Industries, that would be a stray remark because it would be irrelevant. That's from the Seventh Circuit case in 1994. So all we have left with regard to either the prima facie case or with regard to pretext is the plaintiff's only unsupported opinions of PC's discriminatory motive, which doesn't exist in this case, and there's absolutely no evidence in the record to show that the jobs that were filled by somebody substantially younger, or in some cases, whether or not Mr. Sembos was qualified for that position.
How much of PC was left after this transaction with BCC?
I don't believe that there was any left of PC at that time, Your Honor.
Wasn't there the San Jose office? I mean, there was a little bit left, right?
There may have been some left for a period of time, but I can't tell you how long that was.
Components line.
I apologize. I can't tell you how long that was, Your Honor. Moving on to the state law claims for breach of contract and promissory estoppel, the district court properly ruled that those claims are preempted by ERISA. ERISA preempts all state laws insofar as they may now or hereafter relate to any employee benefit plan, which is subject to ERISA. In the Dranchak case versus...
But before you get on to Dranchak,
yes.
I understood him to be saying that he was making a certain number of arguments that don't depend on the pension plan. Now, we understand that the record is that one of the reasons he didn't want to go with CCC, but suppose he were just saying lost wages, and put to one side the fact that perhaps there's mitigation evidence, what have you. That has nothing to do with ERISA.
Well, it wouldn't have anything to do with ERISA, except that it's unrebutted in this case, Your Honor, that there was one agreement from September of 1998. In record document number 53 in his deposition, page 600, he says that there was only one promise. That promise was made to him in September of 1998, and that Karen Adamski's email was merely a memorialization of the promise that was made in September of 1998. And so we're talking about a situation where drain check would apply, that it's inextricably intertwined with an ERISA plan, and we're talking about comparing one plan to another, and that's why.
So you think the only kind of damages he's really asking for, I mean, we can certainly hear from his lawyer, is the difference in the pension plan and his, in various scenarios, you know, stay at Phillips Components, go to BCC, new job, et cetera, because, of course, comparing all those pension plans would take you into the ERISA preemption cases. But if he's asking for things other than that, then we're not in those cases.
Yeah, I think he's asking for more than just pension benefits. But in light of the Dranchak case, and in light of the fact that we're talking about comparing one pension plan to another, I think that ERISA preemption would apply and that Dranchak would apply to this particular case. In addition to that, Mr. Sembo specifically acknowledged that the purpose of PC's alleged promise was for his pension and health care benefits to remain intact. And that was the purpose. That's record document 53, paragraph 75. In other words, the promise of continued employment cannot be separated out from the alleged promise regarding plaintiff's benefits. Another independent basis as to why ERISA preemption would apply in this case is based on the Second and Fifth Circuit, the Fifth Circuit case of Serafalo. In plaintiff's brief, they mentioned the Pislo case. And that was relied on by the plaintiff. The alleged promise in that case of continued employment was not directly contingent on another promise that implicated an ERISA plan. Rather, Pislo dealt solely with questions of whether a claim is preempted because an ERISA plan must be referenced to compute damages.
But his alleged promise doesn't say anything about pension. It just says, okay, if you don't want to go to BCC, we'll keep you here. Right.
And that would mean, I think, Your Honor, that you would have to compare the two pension plans.
Why? If they just said, we're going to keep you here for some duration of employment, why do you have to think about the pension plan at all?
Well, what he claims the alleged promise was, is that if you are going to, either you go to BCC and you will have the same or equivalent pension plan as you had at PC.
No, I understand that, but maybe he's dropped that. I mean, you know, I'm looking at his brief, and maybe he's just saying, you promised me that I could keep working here. And if that's the promise, then maybe there are incidental pension consequences, but if the focus of the promise is a promise of continued employment, why isn't that separable?
Well, I think that would be based on the Serafalo case,
right.
And the court, the Seventh Circuit, hasn't addressed that
yet. Or Pislo, as you prefer.
Pardon me?
Or the Pislo case.
Or the Pislo case, that's right. There is a split in circuits on that, Your Honor. With regard to the particular promise that we're talking about, or a breach of contract, I don't believe that it's clear and definite. So separate and apart from ERISA preemption, I think we're in a situation where we don't have a specific duration of the promise. We don't have what job it was. We don't know how long it was. We don't know what the duties and responsibilities of that particular position were. And so the promise is not clear and definite enough. I don't believe that there's a breach of contract. So separate and apart from the risk of preemption, I believe that there's an independent basis to affirm a summary judgment on behalf of PC with regard to the fact that there's not a clear and definite statement or promise with regard to the breach of contract. In addition to that, I believe that there was inadequate consideration with regard to it. There was no evidence at all in the record that there was any work that was ever performed for PC during that six-month time period. It was all on behalf of BCC. And with regard to promissory estoppel, the promise must be unambiguous. Here we have a situation that there was an unspecified position with an unspecified salary for an unspecified period of time. I don't think that constitutes an unambiguous promise. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spitz. Ms. Duran, you have 2 minutes. Ms. Duran, with respect to that second Class 2 group of job opportunities, your colleague has suggested that you never really showed that there was anyone hired who was younger for those jobs. Is that right?
That's actually not correct, Judge. What we did was submit a request to admit, and that request to admit indicated variety of positions, some of which were those, and there were actually younger people that were hired for those positions. So I think that adequately speaks to that issue in terms of, yes, younger people were, substantially younger people were hired for those positions.
And as you see it, with respect to that particular group, what is the genuine issue of triable fact that we should tell the district court needs to be tried? With respect to the Class 2 group.
What is
the genuine issue of triable fact that needs to be tried?
Did the company discriminate against Mr. Symbos by not considering him for those positions and hiring younger individuals?
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, if you have anything else, I interrupted you as you got to the podium.
That's okay, thank you. I just wanted to very briefly touch on the whole drain check issue. And obviously, Judge, I know you were very involved in that case. With respect...
We're all involved in every case, I assure you, counsel.
Okay. Well, with regard to that case, as I read it, clearly, and I don't dispute the finding in that case, because the actual contract in that case specifically dealt with the actual pension benefits. And there was no doubt about that. Here, in Mr. Symbos' case, there was never any issue that the company was ever making any promise to him that if he stayed with Phillips that his pension credits would continue or he'd have any better pension situation than he did. The whole point, like Tislow, just like Tislow, was so that he can continue his employment, and that's it. Continue my employment. That's what I want. Ultimately, what's the, you know, the goal is hopefully.
And what
that.
Are the damages he wanted? And if you could just take one extra
Absolutely.
Second.
Absolutely. Lost wages. That's been claimed. Lost wages as a result of his termination for not continuing his employment. Pension benefits, health benefits, and that's what we're looking. But there's lost wages significantly, and that has been an issue in the case. And it has been calculated in terms of expert testimony. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan. Our thanks indeed to both Mr. Spitz and Mr. Ryan for their fine presentations today. The case will be taken under advisement.